Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 874, update on fascism and the new age. This is being recorded on November 13th of the year 2015. In this program, we're going to continue with a line of analysis that we presented in the previous program that we have presented over the years in various broadcasts and lectures. We are going to be talking about elements of overlap between fascism and Nazism in particular, and elements of the so-called New Age. I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing the New Age as fascist, and as I mentioned previously, one of the things that makes the use of what Peter Lavenda called weaponized religion in this instance is that the people by and large who gravitate to the New Age are generally of goodwill and gentle disposition, which makes their seduction by some genuinely insidious elements all that more evil, in my opinion. In our previous program, 873, we talked about the Atlantis myth and how that plays into what we have termed esoteric Nazism, and in particular, the notion of Atlantis being the ancestral homeland of the, quote, Aryan race, unquote, and that in turn overlaps notions that the, quote, Aryans, unquote, are of extraterrestrial origin. And we're going to be examining that at considerably greater length in this program as well. Perhaps the greatest, certainly best known example of, quote, Atlanteans, unquote, within the New Age firmament, so to speak, is the woman known as JZ, standing for Judith Zebra Knight, last name K-N-I-G-H-T. Ms. Knight professes to channel a 35,000-year-old, and take your pick, Lemurian warrior or Atlantean warrior named Ramtha, who has all sorts of interesting things to say. And in fact, a lot of the things that Ramtha has had to say dovetail remarkably well with Nazi ideology. Veracity of Ms. Knight's claims, I think, can be weighed against the background of an ex-husband of hers who claims that he saw her rehearsing Ramtha in, I believe it was the bathroom at one point, rehearsing her Ramtha voice. It's also interesting, she withstood a court case. A fellow in Germany claimed that he could channel Ramtha. Oh, I feel Ramtha coming through, and she engaged in litigation and won, claiming that she was the only person who could channel Ramtha. And as to what Ramtha has to say, or as many believe, what J.Z. Knight has to say through the persona of, quote, Ramtha, unquote, we're going to go to a source that would appear to be altogether unlikely, and that is the, in terms of assessing New Age, that is the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence report. This is from issue number 154 from the summer of 2014. It's an article called Ramtha Wild, R-I-L-E-D, by Susie, S-U-S-Y, Buchanan, B-U-C-H-A-N-A-N. And I would point out that in this article, there are references to the city in Oregon where she set up shop, Washington, Yelm, Y-E-L-M, Washington. And R-S-E stands for the Ramtha School of Enlightenment. So let's partake of this enlightenment right now, shall we? Again, from Ramtha Riled by Susie Buchanan. It's March of 2011 at the Ramtha School of Enlightenment in this rapidly growing town just outside of Olympia. Hundreds of truth seekers pack into a converted horse arena to hear a 35,000-year-old Lemurian warrior speak the wisdom of the ages. The crowd is yearning for superconsciousness and enlightenment. What they get is drunken ramblings peppered with curse words. There is no Kool-Aid being served, just red wine, bottles and bottles of it. Wine ceremonies, which have been going on at RSE since 1996, are significant because students believe wine grapes were brought to Earth by extraterrestrials 450,000 years ago. The blonde on stage is Jay-Z for Judith Zebra Knight, a 65-year-old former radio queen and cable TV saleswoman. The words coming from her mouth aren't hers, the assembled crowd believes, but rather those of the ethereal being she channels, Ramtha, the Enlightened One. Knight goes back and forth between herself and the supposedly channeled Ramtha. During the 16 or so hours the students spend in a spiritual drinking game, students must drink every time Ramtha Knight does. Knight will disparage Catholics, gay people, Mexicans, organic farmers, and, hold your breath, Jews. Quote, F blank 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 God's chosen people. I think they've earned enough cash to have paid their way out of the goddamn gas chambers by now, unquote, she says, as members of the audience snicker. There are also pictures when she declares Mexicans, quote, breed like rabbits, unquote, and are, quote, poison, unquote, that all gay men were once Catholic priests, and that organic farmers have questionable hygiene. I would say, parenthetically, she could run for president on the Republican ticket. I think she might outpoll Donald Trump at this point. Continuing. The excerpts from that wine ceremony left Thurston County residents shocked and wondering if there was a more sinister side to their kooky neighborhood cult. Was there a hate group lurking in the pride of the prairie, as Yelm calls itself? She, skipping down, she, Knight, began channeling Ramtha in public in 1979, presenting his wisdom nationally and internationally through workshops and retreats called Ramtha Dialogues, unquote. Early students included Shirley MacLaine, who broke off contact with Knight 30 years ago, a spokesman for the actress and author said, and RSE officials say actress Richard Chamberlain and Mike Farrell are also members. Actress Selma Hayek and former Dynasty star Linda Evans are current students, they add. That same year, she purchased an 80-acre ranch in Yelm, Washington, where she would breed Arabian horses for a time, build herself a 12,800-square-foot chateau, subsequently sell the horses, remodel the 15,000-square-foot horse arena, and open what would become RSE in 1989. I would say she basically switched off the horses for what the horses produce from their hindquarters. And that is what she is peddling, courtesy of Ramtha. Grow a lot of extraterrestrial grapes with that particular product. Continuing, the location has significance that goes beyond cheap land. The region, according to RSE, was actually part of ancient Lemuria during Ramtha's lifetime, before he migrated to Atlantis and freed his people from tyranny at the age of 14, then went on to conquer two-thirds of the world at the head of an army of 2.5 million. After being run through with a sword during battle, Ramtha sat on a rock and meditated for 7 years, became enlightened, taught his body to vibrate at a high frequency, and ascended like Jesus, RSE's website explains. Skipping down again. But Knight also teaches students to be sovereign, to hoard gold, and prepare food and supplies to survive for 2 years after one of the natural disasters that she often predicts will hit the earth. Knight, as Ramtha, is also quoted on the neo-Nazi web forum Stormfront, where her writings on the New World Order, unquote, are much appreciated, and quoted under headings such as, quote, Jews were responsible for causing World War I and World War II. Quote, it took a lot to get this country into the First World War because no one wanted to get into it. And so the gray men, parenthetically, obviously the Jews, owning most of the media. Do you know what the media is? I have learned that term, unquote. wrote Ramtha, unquote, in 1999's Ramtha, the White Book, which also carries an introduction by Knight. The gray men own them all, you know, the papers you read, the box you watch, the magazines you thumb through, the radio waves you listen to, unquote. In 2004, RSE students produced an infomercial for the school disguised as a documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know, unquote. The film grossed $10 million in the United States, but was panned by critics, quote, New Age hooey disguised as a scientific documentary about quantum physics, unquote, is how Jack Garner of the Rochester New York Democrat and Chronicle summed it up. Appearing in the film is Mikael Ledwith, a former Monsignor in the Catholic Church, advisor to the Pope, and president at St. Patrick's College, Maynooth, an Irish seminary dating back to 1518. Ledwith resigned abruptly in 1994 after allegations of pedophilia, which were later settled out of court, and was defrocked by the Vatican in 2005. Ledwith, who was part of Knight's inner circle and has been a student at RSE since 1989, can be seen in the full-length 16-hour video of the 2011 wine ceremony, where he takes the stage with Knight about 7 hours in, propping himself up on Ramtha's ornate throne. F-blank-blank-blank Jehovah, Knight proclaims, speaking in Ramtha's voice, and outing Jesus as a fellow alien who came to this planet to basically teach the same things. From the same stage, Ledwith denounces the biblical God as, quote, fickle, capricious, psychotic, neurotic, and insecure, and we are supposed to believe that he is the creator God, unquote. Knight adds that God is a, quote, psychotic, insecure son of a bitch, which draws a chuckle from the former priest. Then they dance. So again, presented under the guise of mysticism here is essentially a fascist political ideology, one that is fundamentally racist, and as we spoke about in For the Record 873, one that has at its foundation polygenesis, and that is part and parcel to scientific racism, the notion that some races evolved differently from others, and despite overwhelming scientific evidence to the contrary. I would note, too, that elements of the fascist New Age cosmology, and again, please do not misunderstand me as characterizing all or perhaps even most of the New Age as fascist, but there are powerful elements in it that are. And sadly, I have found that most of the people involved with this are really not aware of just how insidious much of the stuff that they are dealing with really is. Note that according to, quote, Ramtha, unquote, Jesus was also an alien who came down to the U.S., perhaps, I don't know if he was the one who brought the grapes to Earth 450,000 years ago, but there are significant areas of overlap between, yes, we came from outer space, and therefore some of us are more highly evolved than others. We're going to be dealing with the Nine in a rebroadcast of For the Record 170. And that talks about how all Earth people are evolved from a bunch of tall, blonde-haired, fair-skinned, blue-eyed space aliens, except for black people, of course, which means, therefore, that they are genetically inferior. And I guess at least to that faction of the Nine-affiliated faction of the so-called New Age, black lives really don't matter, or at least they don't matter as much as white lives, because they are evolved from our tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned space alien progenitors. And I want to call people's attention to the degree of overlap between Project Paperclip imports and the so-called New Age. One of the major epicenters of the so-called New Age is an institution called the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Noetic is N-O-E-T-I-C. It is based right here in the General Bay Area. It's based in Petaluma to the north of San Francisco. And it overlaps a lot of different aspects of the New Age. What I find so interesting is that one of its co-founders was none other than Wernher von Braun, the SS officer and V2 rocket scientist of Nazi Germany, who became one of the most important of America's space scientists, along with another man named Arthur. Well, there are many Project Paperclip scientists. Arthur Rudolph created quite a stir here in the Bay Area when he was outed, and he eventually lost his citizenship. Also, the Institute for Noetic Sciences was founded by an astronaut named Edgar Mitchell, who claims he saw a UFO during one of his trips to the moon. And perhaps he did. I think we haven't got time to go into it here, but I have talked about so-called UFOs in the past, and there is very strong evidence that they are real. They do not come from outer space. People have seen Frisbees thrown around, right? Well, a Frisbee is a disc-shaped airfoil. When the motive force of one's hand is applied to it, it flies. And the notion that human beings, with all of the remarkable technological arsenal or array at their disposal, could not make a disc-shaped airfoil that would fly just is not a logical conclusion. You've seen a Frisbee, right? It flies, doesn't it? Well, if the WAMO Corporation can make one, you can damn bloody well bet that the aerospace industries of advanced nations could make them, and the evidence suggests that they have. Of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, from their Wikipedia entry, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or IONS, is an American nonprofit parapsychological research institute. It was co-founded in 1973 by former astronaut Edgar Mitchell, along with Wernher von Braun, investor Paul N. Temple, T-E-M-P-L-E, more about him later, and others interested in purported paranormal phenomena in order to encourage and conduct research on noetic theory and human potentials. The Institute conducts research on such topics such as spontaneous remission, meditation, consciousness, alternative healing practices, consciousness-based healthcare, spirituality, human potential, psychic abilities, psychokinesis, and survival of consciousness after a bodily death. Again, I think many people who might have gravitated to the Institute of Noetic Sciences or some of their derivative disciplines, if one could call them that, are not to be faulted. Rather, I think this should serve as something of a red flag for the deadly serpent that lies beneath the seemingly benign and perhaps even superficially attractive surface. And of Wernher von Braun, again, he has been portrayed as something of an apolitical technocrat. I remember seeing him when I was a little kid on the Walt Disney TV show explaining all about how we were going to go to space and so forth. I knew he had worked for Nazi Germany, but I was just a kid at the time. I figured, well, you know, our government wouldn't bring in somebody who was bad and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Sadly, that was not the case. Not only was Wernher von Braun a war criminal, and we'll talk about that in a second, he was, in fact, an officer in the SS. From a website, Operation Paperclip Info, and there is a lot of information about this in various books, Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt, Paperclip Conspiracy by Tom Bauer and others, talk about Wernher von Braun and the SS. But from the Operation Paperclip Info website, the entry, Wernher von Braun, an Office of Military Government, United States document dated April 23, 1947, states that von Braun joined the SS Horseback Riding School in 1933 and then the Nazi Party on May 1, 1937 and became an officer in the SS from May of 1940 to the end of the war, skipping down. He began as an Untersturmführer, or second lieutenant, and was promoted three times by Himmler, the last time in June of 1943, to SS Sturmbannführer, Wehrmacht Major. And to give you an idea of some of the spiritual activities in which SS officer Werner von Braun, one of the co-founders of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, engaged, we're going to turn to a recent, a very good book about Operation Paperclip called Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobsen, J-A-C-O-B-S-E-N, published in hardcover by Whiffle Brown, copyright 2014. And of the spiritual practices engaged in by SS officer von Braun, this in connection with recruiting labor for the Dora concentration camp, which in turn fed the construction of the Nordhausen V2 facility. Skipping down. This time, Werner von Braun initiated the action himself. On August 15, 1944, von Braun wrote a letter to a Mittelwerk engineer, Albin Sawatzki, A-L-B-I-N-S-A-W-A-T-Z-K-I, describing a new laboratory he wanted to set up inside the tunnels. Von Braun told Sawatzki that to expedite the process, he had taken it upon himself to procure slave laborers from the Buchenwald concentration camp. And of the sorts of spiritual activities that were engaged in at the Buchenwald concentration camp and at Dora, again from Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobsen, the prisoners worked 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, putting together V weapons. By the end of the first 2 months, there were 8,000 men living and working in this cramped underground space. There was no fresh air in the tunnels, no ventilation system, no water, and very little light. Quote, blasting went on day and night, and the dust after every blast was so thick that it was impossible to see 5 steps ahead, unquote, read one report. Laborers slept inside the tunnels on wood bunk beds. There were no washing facilities and no sanitation. Latrines were barrels cut in half. The workers suffered and died from starvation, dysentery, pleurisy, pneumonia, tuberculosis, and phlemasia from beatings. The men were walking skeletons, skin stretched over bones. Some perished from ammonia burns to the lungs. Others died by being crushed by the weight of the rocket parts they were forced to carry. The dead were replaceable. Humans and machine parts went into the tunnels. Rockets and corpses came out. Workers who were slow in the production lines were beaten to death. Insubordinates were garroted or hanged. After the war, war crimes investigators determined that approximately half of the 60,000 men eventually brought to Nordhausen were worked to death. That sure sounds spiritual, doesn't it? Another of the co-founders, one of the major financiers as well of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, is worth noting. It's a guy named Paul Nathaniel Temple Jr. And from his Wikipedia site, or entry, I should say, Paul graduated from Princeton University in 1944 and Harvard Law School in 1948. From 1954 to 1961, he was an international petroleum concessions negotiator for Exxon. He and astronaut Edgar Mitchell co-founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences in 1973. He has been a member of the Institute of Noetic Sciences Board of Directors since 1973 and was the chairman from 1983 to 1999. He created the Temple Awards for Creative Altruism. He helps fund the Fellowship Foundation, a secretive U.S.-based religious and political organization founded in 1935 by Methodist minister Abraham Varide, V-E-R-I-D-E. Paul N. Temple was an insider core member, unquote, of the Fellowship Foundation and or Institute for Christian Leadership since the 1940s. Well, we focused on the Fellowship Foundation of Abraham Varide in For the Record program number 697. That is linked in the description for the Record 874 that will be published shortly after the program has aired. And it should be noted that the Fellowship Foundation, nominally Christian, actually presents what might be termed, using the term that Peter Lavenda used, weaponized Christianity. Rather than preaching what Jesus is said to have preached, this basically makes wealthy people out to a sort of a notion of the Calvinist elect, that wealthy people are wealthy because they are the chosen of God, and that's why they are doing so well. It's essentially a form of corporatist Christianity, and not surprisingly, the Fellowship Foundation, or the Family as it is also known, was deeply involved with the Third Reich and helped to sanitize and politically rehabilitate Third Reich alumni for their activities in the Cold War and in the Underground Reich and the Federal Republic of Germany. An excellent book called The Family by Jeff Charlotte, Charlett, goes into that at considerable length. And again, for the record, 697 goes into that. Now, the notion, or the fact, I should say, that an extremely reactionary Christian organization, I would describe it as fascist, would be financed in considerable measure by one of the same people who was also financing the Institute for Noetic Sciences, is something that we should very carefully consider, because again, we're looking at what we would think of as very different forms of religious orientation. And yet, actually, if you begin digging, I think you'll find that there is an awful lot of fascism buried into much of this. And before going to For the Record, a rebroadcast of For the Record 170, another NASA/Nazi/UFOs carrying our brothers in space who founded our civilization is a fellow named Joseph F. Blumrich, B-L-U-M-R-I-C-H. He had worked for the Nazi aerospace industry, specifically working for the Messerschmitt firm, making, among other aircraft, the ME-110 fighter. Eventually, he emigrated to the U.S. and became one of the top officials with the Marshall Space Flight Center. And we're going to, in a linked article, his curriculum vitae, including his work as a very important NASA official, is included. Again, that is in a linked article about Joseph Blumrich. It basically whitewashes his involvement with the Nazis, saying he could not have had a Nazi orientation or he would not have been allowed to work for NASA. Yeah, you mean like Wernher von Braun, right? What Joseph F. Blumrich is contending, however, is that the account of Ezekiel in the Bible, the Old Testament, was actually the account of Ezekiel's meeting with space aliens, not God, but space aliens who came to Earth, etc., etc., etc. Again, the notion of the extraterrestrial origin of human beings is a major element of New Age philosophy, and has at its core the polygenesis principle, which is fundamentally linked to scientific racism. From the Wikipedia entry, The Spaceships of Ezekiel. The Spaceships of Ezekiel, 1974, is a book by Joseph F. Blumrich, written while he was chief of NASA's Systems Layout Branch of the Program Development Office at the Marshall Space Flight Center. In it, he asserts that Ezekiel's account in the Bible was not the description of a meeting with God in a prophetic vision, but a description of several encounters with ancient astronauts in a shuttlecraft from another planet. Ezekiel was an Old Testament prophet who wrote about several visions he had in which he said God showed him the future and gave him various messages to deliver. Ezekiel describes seeing God riding in a chariot-like vehicle attended by angels. I would also point out that Blumrich also believes that the Hopi Indians also were visited by beings from another planet. The point being that yet another important NASA official with a Nazi aerospace industry background is promoting our brothers from space and the UFO, extraterrestrial origin, or partial extraterrestrial origin of the human race. What we're going to do now for the balance of the program is to go back in time to, for the record, 170 from 1999. And here is, for the record, 170.
Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to take a look at an article about something that is of great concern to me and something that might seem ludicrous to some members of the audience, namely the perversion of religion and philosophy for the purposes of recruiting people to the fascist cause. Now, again, this may seem strange or irrelevant. I would note in this regard that there is a very strong occult element involved with Nazism, something I've spoken about in among other programs, the ultimate evil, Satanism, mind control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, a four-part series available from Spitfire. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who has uncovered what appears to be, well, certainly a link between elements of the New Age and fascism and possibly to mind control experimentation either by the Central Intelligence Agency or perhaps, say, a subgroup within that. This, again, research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from a rather uneven publication called Fortean Times, F-O-R-T-E-A-N. Times, and this is from Fortean Times, issue number 126. This is not a publication that I know a great deal about. They appear to have some factual information and some hoo-ha, so it appears to be a fairly uneven publication. I'm neither endorsing nor condemning the publication by accessing this particular article. It appears to be uneven. It's also a publication I don't know a great deal about. It seems to specialize in the weird, etc. This is certainly weird, however, I think it also is more than a little sinister. This is entitled Plan 9 from Outer Space, and research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from Fortean Times, issue number 126, from October of 1999. And this concerns a channeling cult called the Nine, and it reads as follows. One New Age channeling cult, above all the rest, has had a huge, very disturbing influence on hundreds of thousands of devotees worldwide. Known as the Nine, its disciples include cutting-edge scientists, multimillionaire industrialists, and leading politicians. This exclusive extract, based on the Stargate conspiracy by Lynn Picknett and Cleve Prince, looks at the sinister origins of the Nine. By the way, I would note that the number Nine not only has occult significance, it was held as particularly significant in the Odinist religion, to which many Nazis and white supremacists subscribe. Quote, and it begins with a quote from one of these, quote, channelers. I would note that channeling is something that I don't believe in. I don't think it's a real phenomenon, but so please note that in passing here. Quote, I am the beginning. I am the end. I am the emissary. But the original time I was on the planet Earth was 34,000 of your years ago. I am the balance. And when I say I mean because I am an emissary for the Nine. It is not I, but it is the group. We are nine principles of the universe, yet together we are one, unquote. And the authors go on to say, the declaration above is typical of the channeled pronouncements of the Council of Nine, or just the Nine. They contain all the usual New Age ingredients of grandiose statements, shaky grammar, and unprovable predictions. But unlike all the other channeling cults, that of the Nine has serious clout. Perhaps the reason for this is that they claim to be the Aeneid, the nine major gods of ancient Egypt. Or could there be another reason, one that owes more to the X-Files than the pyramid texts? Although the Nine may appear to be quintessentially a modern phenomenon, our research uncovered its truly astonishing pedigree. In fact, the story begins nearly 50 years ago in a private research laboratory in Glen Cove, Maine, called the Round Table Foundation, run by a medical doctor named Andrea Puharich, P-U-H-A-R-I-C-H, also known as Henry K. Puharich. Set up in 1948 to research the paranormal, among the noted psychics studied at the foundation, were the famous Irish medium Eileen Garrett and the Dutch clairvoyant Peter Herkos, or Peter van der Herk. Prominent members included the influential philosopher and inventor Arthur M. Young, and the socialite Alice Bouverie, née Astor. In December 1952, Buharich brought into his laboratory an Indian mystic named Dr. D.G. Vinod, V-I-N-O-D, who began to channel the nine, or the nine principles. In the months before Vinod returned to India, a group met regularly to hear the nine's channeled wisdom. Never known for their modesty, the nine proclaimed themselves to be God, stating, quote, "God is nobody else than we together, the nine principles of God," unquote. 3 years later, there appeared to be independent confirmation of their existence. In Mexico, Buharich and Young met Charles and Lillian Lockheed, that's spelled L-A-U-G-H-E-A-D, former Christian missionaries who were by then prominent in the burgeoning UFO contactee movement. For a description of their involvement in the Dorothy Martin Circle, see Jerome Clark's When Prophecy Failed in 40 and Times 117. Back in the States a few weeks later, Buharich received a letter from the Lockheeds containing messages received by their group's channeler. This message also claimed to come from the Nine Principles, even amazingly including references to the earlier communications transmitted through Dr. Vinod. Could the Nine possibly be for real? Perhaps the answer was embedded in the career of Buharich himself. After disbanding the Roundtable Foundation in 1958, he worked for 10 years as an inventor of medical devices and achieved international recognition as a parapsychologist, most famously studying the Brazilian psychic surgeon Arrigo Jose Pedro de Freitas. But all that was to pale into insignificance because in 1971, Buharich discovered Uri Geller. At their first meetings in Tel Aviv in 1971, Buharich hypnotized Geller in an attempt to find out where his abilities came from. As a result, the young Israeli started to channel Spectra, an entity which claimed to be a conscious supercomputer aboard a spaceship. However, Buharich suggested to him that there might be a connection with the Nine Principles, and Spectra readily agreed that there was. The Nine claimed that they had programmed Geller with his powers as a young child. Through Geller, the Nine alerted Buharich to his life's mission, which was to use Geller's talents to alert the world to an imminent mass landing of spaceships that would bring representatives of the Nine. However, Geller, by now an international psychic superstar, bowed out in 1973 and has resolutely turned his back on the Nine ever since. Buharich had to find other channels. He joined up with aristocratic former racing driver Sir John Whitmore and Florida-based psychic and healer Phyllis Schlemmer, that's S-C-H-L-E-M-M-E-R. They found a new channeler, a Daytona cook known to history only by the pseudonym Bobby Horn, H-O-R-N-E, who lived to regret his dealings with the Nine. Driven to the brink of suicide by their constant demands, he too dropped out of the scene, his despair being dismissed by Whitmore as, quote, signs of instability, unquote. After this, Phyllis Schlemmer was appointed the authorized spokesperson for the entity known simply as Tom, who represented the Nine. Buharich, Whitmore, and Schlemmer then set up Lab 9 at Buharich's estate in Ossining, New York. The Nine's disciples included multimillionaire businessmen, many hiding behind pseudonyms, and including members of Canada's richest family, the Bronfmans. European nobility, scientists from the Stanford Research Institute, and at least one prominent political figure who was a personal friend of President Gerald Ford. We also know that Lyle Watson, then the darling of the alternative scene because of his seminal 1973 book Supernature, was involved, as was the influential counterculture guru Ira Einhorn and Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek. Roddenberry was part of that circle in 1974 and 5, and even produced the screenplay for a movie about the Nine. How much he was influenced by them is unknown, although it is said that some of their concepts found their way into the early Star Trek movies and the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, What a Giveaway series. That parenthetical element is in the article. There was a character named Vinod, spelled the same way, by the way, in one Deep Space Nine episode. Another key player in Lab 9 was Dr. James J. Hurtak, H-U-R-T-A-K, who was appointed Buharich's second-in-command by the Nine. In fact, Hurtak had been independently channeling the Nine since 1973. Buharich and Whitmore commissioned British writer Stuart Holroyd, H-O-L-R-O-Y-D, to write an account of their adventures, which appeared in 1977 as Prelude to the Landing on Planet Earth, retitled Briefings for the Landing on Planet Earth in paperback. In this extraordinary book, the true identity of the Nine and of Tom was finally revealed. Far from being the chummy character that his rather avuncular name suggests, Tom is actually Atum, A-T-U-M, the creator god of the ancient Egyptian religion of Heliopolis, and Uncle Tom with his eight mates are none other than the great Aeneid of Heliopolis. By the way, I would add, this is in their own estimation. I don't believe any of this stuff, and I'm being polite. I mean, I believe in the existence of these people, but I don't think they're channeling anybody from outer space. Continuing. But even with such impressive contacts, all was not well with Buharic. Lab 9 broke up in 1978 after a series of mysterious events that culminated in an arson attack on the Ossining estate, and he fled to Mexico, claiming that he was being persecuted by the CIA. He returned to the USA 2 years later and appears to have played no further part in the 9 story. He died in 1995 after falling down the stairs in his South Carolina home. Again, note the accidental death of Andy Buharic. Whether it was exactly that type of a death or whether there was more to it, I don't know. But I would encourage people to hold open the possibility that that may have been more than an accidental death. When people have been involved with fascism and or the intelligence community, it is, does not do much for one's longevity. And one needs to examine the untimely deaths of people involved with those milieu with a very critical eye. Continuing, after discussing the death of Buharic, the authors write, however, the Nine continued. Not only did Schlemmer and Whitmore continue their mission, but Dr. Hertog has also moved on. He has become a major player in the unfolding millennial drama currently being played out at Giza, but perhaps more importantly, he has established himself as a New Age guru par excellence, traveling the world giving workshops on his book of channeled revelations from the Nine, The Keys of Enoch. Written and laid out in classic biblical style, its darkly apocalyptic vision has huge numbers of influential devotees. This, we find very worrying. Another Nine channel, an Englishwoman named Jenny O'Connor, was introduced to the avant-garde Esalen Institute in San Francisco by Sir John Whitmore. I would add Esalen is actually a Big Sur in Northern California. It's not in San Francisco, so a slight factual correction there. Continuing, she and the Nine became so influential there that they held seminars and, unbelievably, were actually listed on the Institute's staff, even successfully ordering the sacking of its chief finance officer and the reorganization of its entire management structure. This should concern us, because many influential people attended the Nine's Esalen seminars, including Russians who were part of the Institute's Soviet exchange program. Some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. I would add in Radio Free America program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, I analyzed the U.S. intelligence and German intelligence destabilization of the Soviet Union. The possibility that the quote Nine unquote may have been involved with such a destabilization effort is one that should not be too readily dismissed. Resuming again with the narrative, speaking of Russians who were involved with the Nine seminars, some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. The Esalen Institute now runs the U.S. branch of the Gorbachev Foundation. The Nine are very much still with us. One of their recent channels, who is also in contact with Tom, is the American writer David M. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S. He is the co-author with Britain's David S. Percy of that extraordinary tome, Two-Thirds, A History of the Galaxy and the Human Race, according to Myers' otherworldly contacts, who clearly have no sense of the absurd. Percy, best known as a champion of the face on Mars and the hoaxing of the Apollo moon landings, was at one time part of the Schlemmer Circle. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog. The Nine's great prophet, who has promised this idea since as long ago as 1973, actually, let me reread this last sentence. It's incorrectly punctuated. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog, the Nine's great prophet, who has promoted this idea since as long ago as 1973. Richard C. Hoagland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D, familiar to 40 and Times readers as another unrepentant Mars face enthusiast, is also clearly under the Nine's spell. David Myers and David Percy were respectively American and European Director of Operations for Hoagland's Mars mission. In fact, his interpretation of the monuments of Mars comes directly from the Nine. Flake though he may appear, increasingly in these hallowed pages, but his influence over huge swaths of the hungrier mystery seekers is undeniable. This is the man who addresses rapt audiences at the United Nations. But it is in the New Age channeling circuit that the Nine have truly come into their own. In any other circles, their true agenda would no doubt have been rumbled long ago, but this is the New Age. Anything the Nine say must be sweetness and light, right? But an objective reading of their divine pronouncements reveal the first stirrings of something very nasty in paradise. Their words appeared in 1992 as the book The Only Planet of Choice, credited to transceiver Schlemmer and edited by Mary Bennett, a one-time member of the Schlemmer Circle, who also edited Myers and Percy's Two-Thirds. This has had an unprecedented influence over the New Age. According to Paulden Jenkins, P-A-L-D-E-N Jenkins, editor of an earlier edition of Only Planet, more and more New Age channeling groups are realizing that the real source of their wisdom is the Nine. In fact, we have discerned what amounts to a campaign. In fact, we have discerned what appears to amount to a campaign by the Nine or their adherents to take over the New Age. It would be a mistake to underestimate the economic or even political potential of this vast subculture. Rich pickings indeed. But the Nine's influence does not extend merely to New Age channeling circles. Andrea Buharich, James Hertok, and Richard Hoagland have all lectured at the United Nations in New York. And individuals connected with the Nine are also known to have influence with Vice President Al Gore. Of course, if the Nine really are the ancient gods of Egypt, then surely there could be fewer more significant events than their return. One may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I would add, the mere fact of adding this, asking that question, I take it as given that what the Nine is saying is at least superficially complete drivel. However, I suspect that they have a hidden agenda. Just what that hidden agenda is, I think, will become pretty clear very shortly. So could it be really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I take it as axiomatic that they're not. But that, I guess, reflects the difference in perspective between 40ian Times and Dave Emery. Continuing, one may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? Can it be that they have actually returned to sort us all out, scattering love and enlightenment from their high moral ground? Tom, in The Only Planet of Choice, chooses his words carefully as he explains that all the races of the Earth were seeded from space gods except one, the indigenous race, unquote, the blacks. He is very careful to urge us not to make an issue out of this. After all, it's not the black race's fault that they have no divine spark like the rest of us. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of the history of the Nine is its relationship to the career of Andrea Buharich. Recent research has revealed Buharich to have a distinctly sinister side. As an army doctor in the 1950s, he was deeply involved with the CIA's notorious MKUltra mind control project. He, together with the infamous Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, experimented with a variety of techniques to change or induce actual thought processes, even to creating the impression of voices in the head. These techniques included the use of drugs, hypnosis, and beaming radio signals directly into the subject's brain. And significantly, he was engaged in this work at exactly the same time that the Nine made their first appearance at the Round Table Foundation. The foundation itself is now known to have been largely funded by the Pentagon as a front for its medical and parapsychological research. Buharich was still working for the CIA in the early 1970s when he brought Uri Geller out of Israel. Buharich's use of hypnosis is particularly interesting in the Nine circle. In the case of Uri Geller and Bobby Horn, he first hypnotized them and then suggested that they were in touch with the Nine, and lo, they were. Ira Einhorn, a close associate of Buharich during the 1970s, confirmed to us that he believed that Buharich was humanly directing, unquote, the Nine communications. The evidence we have gathered strongly suggests that Tom and his fellow gods originated not in the stars, but behind closed doors as part of a CIA mind-control experiment. And what happened to that experiment? Now, with hundreds of thousands of devotees, some in very high places, can the Nine be deemed a success? Of course, that depends very much on what the CIA had in mind. With their subtle racist propaganda, perhaps the flaky New Age Nine should worry the hell out of us. I agree with that last statement, not only because of this particular manifestation of irrationalism, because in general, it appears to me that this society is retreating into not only irrationalism, but those aspects of fundamentalist religion which appeal to irrationalism, and there is no shortage of those. And I think that not only fundamentalist Christians and others, but people involved with the New Age need to be particularly alert for fascist propaganda masquerading as New Age philosophy, and that would certainly appear to be the case with the Nine. I would note in this regard that Nazi mystic Julius Evola has become very influential New Age circles, and also a guy named Albert Pike. That fellow Albert Pike had been a Confederate general and was in charge of military intelligence for the Confederate armies during the American Civil War. He also was the disciple of an occultist named Eliphas Levi, and he also, along with Nathan Bedford Forrest, another Confederate general and disciple of Eliphas Levi, founded the Ku Klux Klan. I was talking to someone about Albert Pike, and they said to me, well, are you sure it's the same Albert Pike? Albert Pike is very well respected in the metaphysical community. Well, be that as it may, he's also the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and the use of New Age philosophy, like the use of fundamentalist Christianity and a fundamentalist religion of other denominations, is something that can be used to woo people to the Nazi cause, and I think people involved with the New Age need to be particularly alert to those possibilities. Someone who has become very influential in New Age circles, or at least some of them, is a woman who went by the name of Savitri Devi, last name D-E-V-I. There's a book about Savitri Devi, who was an occultist and someone who subscribed to the Hindu-Aryan myth. She also became a major theoretician of post-World War II Nazism. There's a book about Savitri Devi by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, last name Goodrick-Clarke. That book is entitled Hitler's Priestess, subtitled Savitri Devi, the Hindu-Aryan Myth, and Neo-Nazism. The book was published in hardcover by New York University Press, copyright 1998. The ISBN number is 0-8147-3110-4. And there's a discussion of Savitri Devi, who was a mystic and who helped to forge links between Nazi philosophy and elements of the New Age. And we're going to discuss Savitri Devi in future broadcasts as well. Just a couple of passages from this particular book. Again, Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrick Clark. After discussing a presentation in Samizdat Publications of Savitri Devi's work, Samizdat is a Nazi publisher run by a fellow named Ernst Zundel, last name Z-U-U-M-L-O-T-N-D-E-L, who operates out of Toronto. After discussing an issue of Samizdat Publishers of trafficking about of the philosophy and works of Savitri Devi, the author Nicholas Goodrick Clark goes on to comment, Samizdat's presentation of Savitri Devi was evidently part of this strategy designed to entice new audiences with the neo-Nazi message. Ancient mythology and pyramid secrets, Eastern religion, vegetarianism, and green ideas, the very currency of the burgeoning New Age with its interest in exotic religion, spiritual truths, and a worship of nature, could be exploited as bait for the young, unwary, or simply curious. By the late 1970s, the historical experience of the Third Reich was quickly receding into the past. As popular literature and films ably demonstrated, Nazism was becoming something mythical, even fantastic, and also plastic that could be molded and combined with novel associations and thereby given new meanings. By republishing the works of Savitri Devi, Zundel aimed to create a new cultic interest in Hitler, linking him to ancient mysteries, the world of nature, and powerful religious symbols drawn from the Orient. Her ideas have since built unlikely bridges between neo-Nazism and the New Age. Savitri Devi viewed nature in the Hindu fashion as a violent pageant of creation and destruction in which man held no special rights. A cloyingly sentimental love of animals stood in marked contrast to her misanthropic contempt for non-human Aryans, the weak and infirm. Himmler and Rosenberg, among other leading Nazis, also combined a concern for animals with their monstrous blueprints to eliminate all, quote, unworthy, unquote, human life. The Impeachment of Man, her book devoted to a thoroughgoing rejection of the man-centered creeds of Judaism and Christianity, was republished by the far-right Noontide Press in America in 1991. I would add that's a publishing arm of the Liberty Lobby. Continuing. Here, the brutality of social Darwinism meets both the green cult of nature and the antisocial excesses of, quote, animal rights, unquote, activists. Again, the amoral worship of beauty and force implicit in Nazi thinking finds new alliances with Hinduism, the cult of Shiva, and deep ecology, that radical current of ecological thought that condemns modern man as the scourge of nature. And then talking about her background, she was of Greek-English birth and did not live in Germany during World War II, and she actually spent her time in India, and spent the war years in India and actually married a Brahmin. And after discussing that, the author goes on to comment, during these years, Savitri Devi elaborated an extraordinary synthesis of Hindu religion and Nordic racial ideology involving the polar origin of the Aryans, the cycle of the ages, and the incarnation of the last avatar of Vishnu in Adolf Hitler. She regarded the Third Reich as, quote, the holy land of the West, the stronghold of regenerate Aryandom, unquote. Her ideas were actually representative of a certain section of high-caste Brahmin Indian society that hated the Raj and was impressed by Hitler's dramatic challenge of British imperial power. Such Indians were fascinated by the Nazi swastika, a holy Indian symbol, and fondly recalled the German tradition of Sanskrit scholarship since the early 19th century. However, it seemed unlikely that these ideas, so foreign to the actuality of National Socialism, could ever find supporters in the West. The situation changed with the total defeat and collapse of the Third Reich in 1945. In its wake, Savitri Devi pursued a long and busy career as a neo-Nazi apologist and ideologue in Europe. She was arrested by the British occupation forces in Germany for Nazi propaganda activities and imprisoned. Her extravagant Hitler cult, her Hindu Nordicist doctrine of the Aryan race, and unswerving loyalty to the Nazi cause found numerous devotees among her fellow prisoners and demoralized Germans. After her release, she befriended leading personalities of the Nazi regime such as the air ace Hans Ulrich Rudel and the commando leader Otto Skorzeny, who both played an active role in maintaining a global Nazi support network. She met with Nazi emigres and fugitives in Spain, Egypt, and the Middle East. She wrote books hymning the Third Reich and National Socialism, accounts of her propaganda campaign and detention, and a highly charged emotional memoir of her pilgrimage, unquote, to Hitler shrines and other places of Nazi association in Austria and Germany during the 1950s. Skipping down. Nor was her appeal confined to diehard German Nazis and survivors of the Third Reich. The existence of small but persistent neo-fascist and neo-Nazi movements after 1945 in Europe, the United States, and South America is a well-documented fact. And I would note that Savitri Devi, as noted here, had a great deal of appeal to those elements, and do note in connection with the Nine and their notion that we're all evolved from space people except for black people, that that's essentially a Nazi idea, a racist idea, and people should be extremely alert to fascist ideas manifesting themselves through various types of New Age philosophy, because that's an ever-present danger. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.
That again, for the record, program number 170 from 1999. This concludes for the record program number 874, update on fascism and the New Age. This is being recorded on November 13th of 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.